كنافه از ستريت فود، فلافل از ستريت فود، شاورما از ستريت فود، منقوشه از ستريت فود،
بليله حمص،
اذا منقوشه بيتزا.
وي ايت لافنتين فود ات هوم.
ذا اونلي فيليج ان لبنان اند بروبلي ذا اونلي فيليج ان ذا وورلد ذات هاف ا بيكري اوف كبه، نوت ا بيكري اوف بريد، ذات بيكري داز نوت دو بريد.
ذاتس ماي فيفورت.
ويلكم تو ا نيو ابيزود اوف فود انسكريبتد. ان اور لاست ابيزود وي ديسكاست لافنتين كوزين اند ات واز نوت انوف، سو وي سيد يو نو وات، ليتس كونتينيو اند ليتس دو ات اند ليتس ستارت وذ يور فيفورت.
Okay.
Lebanese or home food.
It's not Lebanese, is it?
Yeah.
I think it's Syrian.
Okay.
Okay, my favorite dish is called shishbarak. Shishbarak are small tortellinis, you can call them, dumplings that are meat-filled. And the dumpling is then cooked in a tangy yogurt with coriander and garlic. Agreed?
You like it much, huh? You're
going. So that's my favorite. That's my favorite
on the camera.
My favorite dish. Yeah, I was right on the camera there. Is it Turkish? Is it Syrian? Is it Lebanese? That, I don't know.
Do you have... debate in our last episode, our debate was, okay, Levantine cuisine, who invented it? And we do not have an answer.
Yeah.
Who did what? And we do not have an answer. Let's go into the little tiny details. Your favorite is shish barak.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of kibbeh labniyeh, they call it in Lebanon. So kibbeh, stuffed with meat or not, depending on the families.
Yeah.
Cooked in a yogurt sauce, I would say,
yeah.
That is a little bit hardened.
Yes.
Garlic sometimes not, so less on the garlic in our culture, with a side of rice. And rice is white rice or rice with sha'iriyeh.
Mm-hmm.
So every detail counts.
Yes.
So you can do it, you can do your rice two or three ways. You can Uncle Ben's or Egyptian rice, big or small, etc. You can do it on butter or ghee. Okay, we'll talk about the rice later. And then you can do your kibbeh stuffed or not, small kibbeh or big kibbeh, with the laban with dried mint or not.
I'm starving now.
Yes, I am. We discussed Levantine cuisine, and we're going even further. Who invented what? We don't know. So I'll start with the way we eat in Lebanon. People think that we eat hummus every day.
Yeah.
We don't.
Yeah.
People eat that we eat, think that
yeah.
we eat tabbouleh
every don't, day. We don't have maza on the table.
I call it festive food.
Yeah.
So I call it Saturday and Sunday food. I call it Sunday afternoon lunch, long lunch of 6 hours that starts at 12, where the family gathers, mom, grandpa, etc., and all the kids with their families and sons and daughters. So usually at that kind of lunch, you have 30 to 40 people. It starts with arak. Meza on the table, mashewe, grilled meat, and it goes all the way to 6 p.m. or at 6 p.m. Grandpa goes, has his nap, dad has his nap here, the little kids will play a little bit of football or basketball. The generation will play tawle and wara, and at 6 p.m. it was, okay, wait, we go sleep early, we're done. At home, we eat what we call yakhnet. And there are probably around 200 others. Let's talk about your favorite top five.
It's like yakhne is like a stew, basically. So my favorite ones are bazella, bazella peas, bazella ruz, we call it.
Mm-hmm.
I like bamia,
okay.
Okra. Are we?
Yes. Not our favorites when we were kids.
Yeah,
but we learned to enjoy
absolutely.
Them when
it's
we
It's one
grew
of those
up.
Foods that as a child you hate. And as adult, you love.
Yeah.
So in our house, generally, every day we will have a salad. So it's usually fattoush or tabbouleh, my mom's two favorites. And we always have a rice dish, and we have a yakhne, but we don't call it yakhne.
What do you call it?
I don't know.
That word you told me about last time. Let me tell you that story.
Yeah.
One, don't judge me on it. My favorite dish was bazella and little carrots,
yes.
But the canned ones.
Oh.
So when I met my wife and said, please, can you do me bazella canned? Said, wait, stop on the canned thing. I'll cook it for you.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why, but the way they do the little carrots, and they shape them like a small thing. Usually in homes, we dice them.
It's diced, absolutely.
But the way the carrots are, I always loved probably a scout thing, the bazella alab. Canned bazellas. On another note, did you know that rice is not part of our culture? So in Levantine culture, we always used to eat birghul.
Yes.
And frike. What is frike? Frike is green roasted wheat.
Which is a superfood.
Which is a superfood that has 7 times more nutrient than quinoa, but unfortunately we didn't know how to market it.
And very prevalent in Palestinian cuisine.
Yes.
More than Syrian.
So it's green wheat.
Yes.
pay attention to that green thing. It should, it can come colored sometimes. Yeah. So if you want to know if you're having the real frieke or you're having a fake frieke, put frieke in a glass of water and put water over it. In the next 10 minutes, if water remains water, it's a real green, fresh frieke that is smoked or roasted in a way that has that smokiness, but it's green wheat.
Yeah.
If your water turns green, it's fake frieke that comes from...
Wow, yeah. Did not know that.
Learned and this is what justifies the price. So usually frieke is expensive because you're taking the wheat, which is still green, and you didn't leave it to age, turning it into bergol or turning it into into flour. And then you get that frieke that is probably $1 the bag and say, wow, this is good price.
Do you know if there's an English name for frieke? I don't know.
Not sure.
It's like a super.
This is why we call it green
it's used
wheat.
In Egyptian, they stuff... pigeons with it, hamam bin farik. It's in Syrian and Palestinian. It's also used as a stuffing. You know how they in the West sometimes they make turkey with stuffing or whatever. It's used as a stuffing also.
So frieke is harder to cook. It takes probably up to 3 hours. So you need to cook the wheat. The beauty of frieke is that it absorbs the juices. So you enjoy them. It explodes under the teeth and it's super good for your health. Unfortunately, rice came in late. And when rice came in, automatically it became something very easy to use. It's not part of the original culture, but when it came in, probably around the 1920s, 1930s, everybody turned to rice, and yes. We used less and less wheat. We still use bergol, even though less, only in tabbouleh, in a famous dish which I love is called bergol banadoura.
Yes.
But bergol, that staple, Middle Eastern, Levantine. What is bergol? Bergol is wheat that goes through a long process of soaking, drying, roasting, cracking.
Yeah,
and cracked then you have wheat. That cracked wheat,
yeah.
Which you soak in water again, and it takes volume and absorbs the juice.
And bergol, for people who don't know, is one of the main ingredients of tabbouleh.
Yeah.
Yeah. In Saudi Arabia, we were talking about rice. So we have in our homes, we have to have a rice dish every day. And the day we have Saudi food is rice with a lamb. And most of the time when we do a whole lamb, it's when we have the whole family is coming over or other. So our rice, I remember distinctly when I was younger, we used to have Egyptian rice, which is the bigger, fatter mm-hmm. grain. Mm-hmm. And then more recently, with the times, the basmati rice started coming in, which is a thin, longer grained rice. And today I would think that the basmati is more popular, but there are certain dishes that you can only have with the,
yeah.
or the American one, they call it, the American rice, Big Ben, whatever. So so rice definitely.
My favorite rice dish
yeah.
made with the Egyptian one is rizajish. So rizajish yes. is definitely my ultimate favorite.
Yeah.
They compete, rizajish and wara anab, in my top favorite. Rizajish, I'm a big fan of al dente. Al dente is undercooked pasta. Al dente is undercooked rice. I'm all in on the al dente. I do not like things that are super cooked. Even yeah. my meat is red, etc. Except in rizajish. In rizajish, I like the rice to be way too overcooked.
Yeah.
Soaked in the chicken juices. Lots of ghee,
yeah.
Minced meat on the side.
Lots of black pepper, right?
Lots of black
the
pepper.
The rice comes with a darker color.
The dark color you can get from two things. Or from burning or deep frying onions and then use it to color the rice or using lots of pepper. So usually when you have that brown rice, that all brown rice, that brown comes from the onions. So burned onions that turn into black.
Yeah.
And then you put them in the, yeah. the...
And it's got pieces of chicken in it.
Yeah.
And then there's a broth or a sauce that you put on.
Some people call it stuffed lamb, and some people call it rizajish. Yeah. What does chicken do with lamb? Wait, in our Lebanon culture, it's minced meat, which is the lamb or the beef, and then rice, which usually the same rice and minced meat, you can stuff in a lamb.
Mm.
But when it becomes with chicken, it's riz alajish, so the chicken needs to be down. But but rizajish in Arabic is... rice over the chicken, but how we eat it is rice, minced meat, and chicken on top. So that chicken was added, even though in the Arab culture it's stuffed lamb, so it's more on the meat side.
Yeah, we call it ruz bijaj. In Syrian, ruz bijaj. That definitely one of my favorites also.
Levantine street food.
Levantine street food. discussed the falafel last time, so let's not go there again. We agreed that I like the green one, you like the yellow one.
No to green.
Green all the way. But would you say lahma bajin is a street food? Yeah, it is, right? So we talked also last time, Turkish versus not Turkish. So the most famous lahma bajin for people is lahmacun. Like in the States, it's called lahmacun. But lahmacun is the Arabic word for lahma bilajin. Lahma means meat, bilajin, dough. So for me, it's one of my favorite bites. I know every time I'm in Lebanon, they take me to a place called Barbar. And we stand and we order it and we eat it and it's rolled up, squeeze lemon on it.
You like it with garlic or without garlic?
Without.
The Armenian one,
yeah,
inspired by the Aleppo cuisine, is loaded with garlic.
You mean the white paste?
No. The
in the mix of the meat?
Yes. Okay. So if you go to Bish Hamoud,
yeah,
the Armenians would give it to you with garlic. So it's minced meat, onions, tomatoes,
yeah,
and garlic. And that garlic gives it a different touch. Very heavy, it becomes way too heavy.
Yeah.
So it depends, if you have it with garlic, it's more on the Armenian side. Lahma bajin, since you're talking about it, has been developed into lahma bajin with dips and ramen, pomegranate molasses.
Yes.
Lahma bajin with laban, labne. Lahma bajin with bala lahme, so the vegan side of it with mushroom. And the lahma bajin I always remember, and I was really shocked positively about it, is in the Armenian region, they take a lahma bajin, they put roasted eggplant in it and roll it as a sandwich. What a combination.
Wow, nice. I was recently in Istanbul and I was taken to one of the best there. And I really loved it. They make it very thin and crispy. And they also put some stuffing in it, but they put the greens, just some greens. And it's rolled, delicious, delicious food.
So on the street food, Florentine street food, let's taste them. I always said that we invented street food 2,000 years ago, probably, before it became famous. And Americans and British and etc. turned it famous in the last 15 years, calling street food and street food markets and what is a street food and how people eat on the streets.
Yes.
But take a step back and re-understand our culture. Knefe is a street food. Falafel Absolutely. Is a street food. Shawarma is a street food. Manouche is a street
Balila
food.
Balila and hummus.
Balila can be a street food.
Yeah.
So anything that you wrap into a sandwich, anything you eat on the street while walking is a street food. So our culture has street food, but we never knew the name. We never marketed well. It was that eat one bite before going to work. So manouche is something you eat every single day until it became the street food. And the manouche now in the States cost $8 and $7. Yeah. In Europe, you can buy a normal za'atar manouche for €4. A cheese manouche for $6 and the lahme manouche for $11. Whoa, street food manouche, it's only for $0.50 in Lebanon.
Yeah.
So yes, that street food has been developed in a million ways. So from a street food perspective, we take for granted what we have, but we did do a huge influence around the world. Is a manouche a pizza?
For me, yes, absolutely. For me, any open-faced topping on dough is a pizza. Or a pizza is a version of a manouche, you can say. Who knows what came first. But I want to talk about the most famous sandwich, the shawarma. Gyro, doner, shawarma. One thing I recently discovered, when I moved here, I became friends with Chef Orfali, who's maybe the face of Aleppo cuisine, in our region anyway. And I asked him to teach me about Aleppo cuisine, so he took me to a restaurant in Sharjah that does Aleppo cuisine, and he ordered the shawarma, and I had it, and he looked at me, he's like, do you notice any difference in taste? I said, yeah, it's not salty, and it doesn't have like the marination, it's more about the meat. And then I started to discover more and more slight differences of how the Aleppo version of foods has less spices and less they add less things to it, less hada. So my favorite shawarma is a salty one that's like hada, cut really thin slices.
Meat, beef.
Cut very like paper thin. That's my favorite kind.
So shawarma comes in many different shapes and it has evolved in different ways. I was impressed by the shawarma, what they call qas in Iraq. So Iraq doesn't call it shawarma.
Qas.
Gus, so it costs, yeah. So you cut it. It's two fatty, way too fatty, but super enjoyable.
Too fatty in a good way or?
In a good way, in a very good way.
Okay.
So what they do is definitely lamb, a huge, big shawarma. And on top of it, you have kind of a 20 to 30 centimeter thickness of lamb fat.
Yeah. And it just melts.
And it melts all day long.
Yeah.
In their sandwich, vegetables are not part of the culture in Iraq much.
Like to in say Turkey. No.
Yes, yeah. Same inspirations. So your sandwich will be meat and tarator, yeah, and lots of fat, and you will feel the fat. Sometimes a little bit of tomatoes and nothing else. So onions are not part of the culture. Parsley is not part of the culture. Yeah. So the shawarma has evolved differently. In Lebanon, a shawarma is meat, a little bit of lamb on top, a little bit of lamb on top, and lots of lamb in the middle. So you would see black, white, black, white, yes, black, white.
There are slices of fat in there.
Hidden slices of fat, yeah, without having that thickness of, yeah, how the Iraqis would do it. Yeah. And then your sandwich is flat bread. In Iraq, it's samoun bread, so yeah, French kind of bread. And so Lebanese bread, flat bread, shawarma, tarator, biwaz. Biwaz is onions
biwaz
and parsley.
Biwaz, for me, is critical. So it's parsley
and onions.
And onions.
Sometimes they put in it a little bit of mint. Sometimes, yeah, yes, sometimes not.
And it's sumac. And
sumac,
it?
Yes. Yeah. And sumac. And do you
eat
tomatoes.
That? Do you eat with biwaz? No, because the onion. Right?
Yeah. And tomatoes.
Yeah.
And tomatoes. It has evolved along the way. Some put spices in it, some do it, yeah, with hummus, etc. Yes or no? Each one his way.
I want to tell you something. I did some research of my personal, what I like and what I don't like in shawarma. And I noticed that I don't like it when it's done with saj bread. Flat, very thin, paper thin bread. It's rolled and then it's put in a, like a heater.
That's the Syrian way.
Yeah, see, I don't like that. And so, then I was thinking, like, what is it that I don't like about it? And I figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
The bread doesn't absorb the liquids.
The updated version of the Syrian ones, or at least the ones we have in Lebanon and the ones I've tasted in Dubai, are always a Lebanese bread and a saj bread combined.
Okay.
So the Lebanese bread will absorb all the juices, and the saj bread on the saj bread on the outside will give the crispiness. And
it's never toasted. Had that. I
can take you to one that is.
I haven't seen that yet.
So Lebanese saj on the outside,
yeah,
toasted to crisp the saj.
Yeah.
So you will flake soft, flake so soft.
That could be my new favorite one.
It will be.
You want to reveal the name of the place?
Lafah does it in a beautiful way.
Okay. Take me, please.
I will.
Yeah.
We will do a shawarma.
Do you like the chicken shawarma or not? Oh, I'm asking because almost sacrilege to have it without the garlic.
Yeah. So it's a sacrilege for me to answer you.
Yeah.
Because I cannot have it with garlic.
Yeah. So do you put tahina on?
I put hummus.
Hummus. Okay.
And yet, I
love chicken shawarma.
I can only eat it in very few places of which the Syrians, yeah, or the Lebanese who understand that you should not marinate the chicken in garlic.
Yeah.
Garlic out of the fridge kills. So garlic should not be in the marination of the chicken. Since you're going to put garlic sauce, since it's going to be garlic anyway, so that chicken should not have garlic. Chicken needs things to flavor it. Needs things to cover the, which we call in our language zankha, or the bad odor or smell of chicken, but not garlic. And this is crucial and important. So I can eat chicken with my hummus my way, and I enjoy it at very few places. Yes,
my father used to put raw garlic on.
I know. So meat, just to finish on the meat side,
yeah,
it can go, something needs to tender it or tenderize it. Usually they use vinegar. So that vinegar is very crucial not to be smelled and felt. So sometimes you eat a shawarma, you say, it smells vinegar. It's not. It's normal. But how can you cover it up? One. Two, is it tender enough or is it chewy? Do you feel that hard or not? Is it too fatty? It slides under the teeth or not? So shawarma is something very crucial.
Yes.
Safadi has a beautiful one. Beirut Streets has a beautiful one on the Lebanese side. So not any shawarma is shawarma. The adaptation of a shawarma, للأسف, in many countries around, has become something that is pieces of meat or pieces of chicken that look so unappetizing.
Yeah, they cut them into thick pieces sometimes, and then they have to chop it up.
100%. And then they put it on a grill, etc.
Yeah.
So the shawarma needs to look beautiful.
Yes.
In some parts of the world, it is crucial and important, according to the law, to put it on the grill.
Yes.
Because they believe that meat outside of the fridge, and this is why they still accept shawarma in the world. If you look at it, if you think of it, meat needs to be in the fridge. Yes. Except shawarma. Imagine it. So when you take a step back and understand why, yes, they're protecting the cultures of people, but two, in the States, they impose that you put it on the grill.
Food safety. I was recently in Istanbul. I was telling you I had lahma bajin, but I also went to the best, one of the best, donor places. Mm-hmm. I had never had a proper donor. And one thing I noticed is, first of all, it's a huge thing like that. So I was wondering about food safety, but then you realize that they have a lot of traffic, a lot of people. I mean, I went there, I was the first one in line, and already there were people waiting behind me. So it's crucial that there's a lot of people, there's a high turnover for that, so it doesn't sit there all day long.
It's crucial that you do not put the fire off.
And you keep the
heat. What's happening is constantly. That they're putting the fire off and the meat stays out.
That's not good. And I noticed also that it was put in a piece of bread, like a thick pita, and not many toppings. There was only like a grilled tomato or something on there. Maybe one, there was one green pepper, and there was no tahina, no sauce, no nothing. And it's all about the meat. You can eat the meat or meat with the bread. It was good, but I still preferred our shawarma more because I'm more accustomed to that salty, vinegary marination.
The history of donor, they say, has not been invented in Turkey, has been invented by the Turkish in Germany.
Ooh, so there's a big thing going on now.
So Germany has lots of the Turkish people, so they created that donor, which is different. I would say is different. We're talking a lot about proteins.
Yes.
Let's talk about vegetables.
Let's talk about vegetables. Okay. The most famous vegetable dish is the falafel. The Levant is blessed to have fertile ground, so vegetables are a huge part of culture. Do you have a favorite vegetable dish or a vegetable?
I immediately go to fattoush tabbouleh, which I'm going to ask you which one is your favorite.
Yeah.
So tabbouleh, fattoush are the two staples.
Yes.
It's like they're like cousins. I cannot say if I like fattoush or tabbouleh more.
Yeah.
I enjoy tabbouleh whenever I feel like a tabbouleh, and fattoush the same.
Do you like your fattoush with pomegranate molasses?
Yes.
Yeah. I believe that's a Lebanese edition, right?
Yeah. This is a Lebanese update.
Yeah. The one we have at home is a Syrian one, and it doesn't really have a lot of it. It does have a little bit of sugar on it. They add a little bit of sugar.
Never knew.
So of the two, I would pick the Lebanese fattoush with the pomegranate molasses. But in general, I like tabbouleh a lot. We eat it a lot at home. It has onion though, and it's very our tabbouleh is very lemony and tangy and tart.
I reviewed a couple of days ago, yesterday probably or the day before, the safati fattoush.
Yes.
Who do not put onions in it naturally, so I didn't have to ask for a onion fattoush. And for them, it's very important that you feel the vegetables without smelling the onions. So we're throwing onions everywhere. Tawarasil onions. Okay, fine. It's not about me not eating them, but we're sort of throwing them everywhere. And one of them is the fattoush. Fattoush is made to be refreshing, super fresh salad. You need to smell the mint. You need to smell the tomatoes, etc. So onions coming in, what would you smell? Only the onions. So I really appreciated. I discovered that lately.
Toasted or fried bread?
Oh, fried.
Fried, right?
Because toasted would be soggy, so fried all the way. So we're talking about fattoush and tabbouleh, and we should not forget about, when we say 70% vegetarian, hindbe, sbenir, fatayir. Go on and on.
There is a great, it's not a vegetable dish, but I love mhammara. It's an awesome vegan dish made out of walnuts, spicy walnuts.
Favorite.
Very good. We talked a bit about the labneh.
Mm-hmm.
The staple Lebanese.
Let's talk about labneh.
Yeah.
Labneh.
Yeah.
Labneh is not yogurt.
Yeah.
Labneh is not cheese. Labneh is labneh. It's not cheese. Labneh is labneh. Labneh is a category of its own.
Yeah.
Not found anywhere else in the world. Labneh is labneh. And now it is on the shelves of every single supermarket in the world.
Yes.
Everywhere. Labna, labneh. Yeah. You write it in different ways.
Yeah.
How it's written, it's labneh.
Yeah.
Labneh.
Yeah.
Not labna or whatever. So labneh is yogurt, strained, Levantine yogurt, not the Greek yogurt with sugar. It has zero sugar, zero sweetness.
Yes, it's a tangy, savory flavor.
Yes, that's creamy.
Yes.
And you can enjoy it every day.
It's the water is drained out of it, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a breakfast food, lunch, and dinner.
100%.
It's everything.
Have you ever tried it with meat?
Which, no, I've not.
just take a piece of steak, please, and let's talk about it one day. Take a piece of steak, and instead of putting it in mayonnaise or pepper sauce or béarnaise or whatever, just put a little bit of labneh. Yeah. You'll feel that tanginess, that cold labneh that would go around your palate. The mix and match of the intense juices of the protein of the meat and the hot meat you're going to have, and that cold labneh on the side, is outstanding.
Wow.
Labneh with watermelon. Whoa. Yeah. Labneh with a cucumber. Amazing.
You know, a lot of Palestinians eat watermelon and cheese. It's a thing, right? Do you have it in Lebanon also?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's halloumi. My father used to eat that.
Halloumi and watermelon is the latest trend. Halloumi and the melon is the latest trend. And halloumi and fig jam is the latest trend as well. Mm. We should go into comparisons. In comparison to the Americans, what is American food culture? Burgers, meat, smokiness. In comparison to the British culture, what would you have for breakfast? Beans, bone marrow, fat, donuts, sugar stuff here and there, lots of fat here and there. So taking a step back to what we take for granted.
Yeah.
We have the most balanced, beautiful cuisine. The sharing part of it is something Europeans are learning more and more. When you go to France, Parisian or French who do not share much, they go to a Lebanese restaurant and order one hummus.
Mm.
Okay, hummus is for sharing, but they're not into that culture. So rarely you would go to a Lebanese restaurant and find 10 plates on a table because my food, your food, I pay, you pay, my bill, your bill. So the Levantine cuisine has disrupted the world of food into, it's not only about your food, but all together.
Sure, you were talking about sharing. Now, it used to be a trend, but now everywhere you go, we have a sharing concept.
Yeah.
You order for the table. Well, we've been doing that for thousands of years.
Yeah, sharing concept.
A concept. The restaurants now, they tell you, it's a sharing concept. You order for the table, so you order multiple dishes. That definitely came from the maza.
All the way.
Yeah.
All the way, all the way.
We've been doing it for years.
We should not forget about bread.
Yes.
Who invented flatbread?
Yeah.
How creative this is.
Yeah.
How super great this is. Yeah. So flatbread comes in many shapes and sizes. Saj.
Saj and lavash are very similar. Iranians call it lavash, right?
Yeah. They call Lebanese bread. So the flat white bread that you open.
Yeah. The Palestinian version of that is thicker.
Mm-hmm.
That's like what they call pita in the States or in Europe. Greek pita or...
So that flatbread has also changed the world because in a French culture, you will take a baguette. So baguette.
Yeah.
So having a sandwich is lots of bread. In our culture, it's just flat things. You can wrap it.
So we've been having wraps for thousands of years.
Yeah.
The famous Lebanese wrap, which you've done an episode about. The famous gentleman, the old guy who makes the Lebanese sandwich. I remember as a child, we were going from Beirut to Damascus by car, and we stopped in a place called Zahle. And they have a very famous, they'll do the roll.
Masabke.
Yeah, and
Shtura is known for Lebanon.
Shtura. Shtura or Shtura?
Shtura.
I said Zahle. I think it's
Zahle. Shtura is on the way to Zahle, where everyone stops
in Shtura. I think it's Shtura. I forgot. I was really very young. But it was a must stop to have a arus, they used to call it.
Yeah.
Arusa, which means bride.
Yes, Arus Lebanon.
Arus Lebanon. That's what you call the thing. Yeah. Pretty good.
So understanding. So tell me about your discovery to the Levantine culture or Lebanon culture from someone who has lived all his life in Saudi Arabia one way or another. Yeah. So how did you get introduced to these things?
We eat Levantine food at home, but the discovery of the finesse of the Lebanese versions of these dishes. I discovered, first in Lebanese restaurants, because you have, and we talked about that earlier, you have hospitality in your blood. So the restaurants in London and in Paris, the Lebanese restaurants have been there way before the Syrian and the Palestinians. So I discovered it in restaurants. But when you're younger, you don't really think about the subtle differences between hummuses and how salads are made and everything. And it's through my love of food and my obsession of it that I started to learn more and more and more. Then I have a very good friend of mine who lives in Beirut. He lives between here and Beirut. So he invited me there and we went. And that's when I started to learn about regional Lebanese cuisines, how it's different. Like I asked you, like I mentioned, I like raw meats. And in our culture, that's another thing we could talk about. We eat raw meats. We even eat raw liver. He's like, kubbinaye in Trablus, or I don't know what, this, that. Then I'm like, you know what? It's gold you guys have in Lebanon. You have all these different villages and all these different specialities. And so one example I give is, I like, you guys make a little asafir, small birds that are, I think, fried with pomegranate molasses. So last time I was in Beirut, when I was allowed to be in Beirut, was we went, they said, okay, we're gonna take you to the most famous place that does that. And his name is Halim, or mm-hmm. Abu Halim, or Halim.
Halim.
And it's like an hour away, you go up into the mountain. And they're incredible, incredible. So that's what I started to discover, these little gems, these little subtleties, these little differences, specialization. And I'm looking forward to some political stability so I can go back and learn some more. I love raw meats, kubbinaye and all of that. And I went in Beirut to a restaurant called Halabi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And another place I learned a lot about Lebanese cuisine is my really good friend is the second generation owner of Munir restaurant in Brumana. So we go there. It's also one of my mom's favorite places. They have a big outdoor terrace. Sometimes they'll serve up to 2,000 persons a day. And there you go, you sit down, you get on the table, literally 100 different dishes will come. And so I learned a lot from him. One of the main reasons I follow your account is to learn about all of these things.
When you taste something made at home or Levantine or anything on the table of a culture we know, how would you know it's good or bad? What does your taste bud research?
Yeah, you have to develop your palate. Right. So growing up, I know that tabbouleh is supposed to be tangy, lemony, and a little bit salty, methana, for example, or this. So you can tell. You can put the minute you taste it, you're like, it's off. Either they're not following the recipe, or which is another subject we wanted to talk about is, should the person making Lebanese food be Lebanese? Should we talked about that before, and so I think it's you have to have a developed palate. That takes time. I told you in our first episode, mine started developing at the age of 6, 7, 8, being taken to restaurants all over the world, and being go home family. We have very high quality food at home.
There is something in, probably, I would say only in our culture, that's called nafas.
Yes.
That is, call it energy, call it passion, call it love, call it happiness.
Yes.
And all of this you need to feel in Levantine cuisine. So when you eat a kibbinaye, give the same meat to 10 different butchers and it will be different. It's how much love he put into it, how much passion he put into it. And that energy goes through your hands.
Yes.
So because, and this is why I'm not a fan of gloves at all. I read lots of comments saying he didn't wear gloves. Gloves are something wrong. Not in all cases, but they are something wrong. We have been educated into the wearing gloves, and when you go into the details of gloves, plastic, how many bacteria there are on the gloves, are the gloves being changed appropriately? I've seen chefs washing the gloves. I've seen chefs smoking with the gloves. So stop your blocked head about if there are no gloves, it's not clean. Washed hands are way cleaner than gloves. And the washed hands, this is my belief, pass that energy through. So when mom bakes, when mom creates, when mom cooks, when mom feels, you would feel it. You can go to someone that is not happy, does not feel like cooking, had a bad day, and you will taste it.
I agree with you
100%. And I taste it, I feel it. I've called managers many times and say, your chef is not happy today. Your chef didn't come today. There is something off today. And he looks at me and say, yes, how did you know? I just feel it.
I write about that a lot, and I make my lists. And I very recently I said these are some of the restaurants where you can see and taste the love in the food. So I definitely agree with you. It's something that's you can't really explain. It's very hard to explain, but it definitely translates into the food.
So Lebanese food versus Lebanese chef or Syrian chef or Palestinian chef versus African chef or American chef or European chef doing the same cuisine, yes, it can be, but that chef needs to understand what he's doing.
He needs to be able to taste that salad dressing and know.
And feel it.
Yes. That's where sometimes when you follow the recipe and you don't know what it's supposed to taste like, it may not work. Some salts are more salty than others. Mm. You may need 1.5 tablespoons of salt instead of one, whereas the recipe will say one. So that's definitely a determining factor.
Remember a little bit what comes to mind, what is the probably most awkward Levantine dish you had, or special or different, or something that you won't forget?
Oh, probably different kinds of kubbe. Mm-hmm. Like kubbe mishwiye, kubbe trouz, kubbe this, kubbe that. I believe...
That's interesting.
Yeah, the kebab.
So kibbe can be done in a normal kibbe meat. You have kibbe ras, ihdin. You have kibbe zghar with meat. You can have kibbe bassaniye, kibbe ma' basal with onions. Kibbe without being... So, the normal kibbe bassaniye is meat. Is kibbe, minced meat, and kibbe.
Yeah.
In ihdin, they do it just one slice of kibbe. Ihdin is a village in Lebanon.
Okay.
The only village in Lebanon, and probably the only village in the world, that have a bakery of kibbe.
Oh.
Not a bakery of bread. That bakery does not do bread, does not do manaish. So that bakery is a bakery where families from home get their kibbe. I can send you the video. Get their kibbe to the bakery and tell him, bake my kibbe. Yeah. So he doesn't do kibbe, he doesn't sell kibbe.
He just bakes.
And he bakes
so
it.
So he's mastered the flame, the fire, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the oven, old oven, good flames. And it takes probably around $3 or $4 per per tray. On a Saturday and Sunday, you'll have to wait for an hour.
Wow.
So Ihdin and Zgharta are the two villages, it's one village, in it's two villages in one, that are known for their kibbe, and they probably do the best kibbe in the world.
You said your favorite is kibbe labaniye. Have you ever had kibbe trouz?
Of course.
So that's made with rice, and it's long and shaped like that, with yogurt. That's my favorite.
This is delicious. Kibbe trouz.
I believe batata. That's a Palestinian version, kibbe trouz.
Not Lebanese.
Yeah.
Kibbe batata.
Kibbe batata. And then they have rice, kibbe me'liye with rice, and that's yellow in Iraqi. Yeah.
Oof, this one is whoa.
Very good.
How did you remember that?
Yeah.
Yes, lots of things.
Lots of things. We probably forgot a lot. We maybe didn't give credit to certain people and certain races, so we apologize for that.
We're going to say, please send us your comments,
positive
ones,
your questions, hate mail, please.
Your questions, and we'll discuss them.
If you think, you know, you can teach us something new, always, or some suggestions, please send.
We'll be glad to discuss them in our next episodes. So please send us all your comments and everything you think we forgot or you would want to know about. Our episodes continue. It's Food Unscripted. Remember, unscripted is unprepared. So we're sorry
actually,
for every mistake
this
that
episode,
happened.
We just did it like that. Yeah.
We hope you like it.
Yeah.
Hani, thank you. And we'll see you in another episode of Food Unscripted next week.